This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of the Naz and Wally Sports Hour, heard Sunday mornings at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
From hockey to wrestling, football to golf, no sport left unturned. You're listening to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Good morning, Naz. Good morning, Wally. The boys are back. Let's talk sports.
Good morning and welcome to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. I'm your host, Walter Rigabon. Joining me as usual in studio, Naz Marchese. Good morning, Naz. How are you?
Good, Wally. How are you?
Good. I'm doing great. Thank you. Also joining us this morning, former Washington Capitol, former Toronto Maple Leaf, Leaping Lou Franceschetti. Good morning, Lou. How are you?
Good morning, gentlemen.
Thanks for joining us, Lou. Just let our listeners know we will be discussing the bombshell, for lack of a better term, that hit the World Golf Order this week. Tuesday, Commissioner Monahan and His Excellency, I think he's called Yasser from Saudi Arabia, stunned the golf world. Announcing some sort of a merger. We're not exactly sure what it is just yet, but some sort of an arrangement, business arrangement between the PGA Tour and the Saudi Public Investment Fund. We'll have on our good friend John Steinbreder from Global Golf Post, and he'll break it all down for us. Later on in the hour, I call him our golf guru, our golf coach. He's been he's now a PGA Tour coach. He's been coaching Ryan Moore down at Oakdale. So we're pleased to we'll welcome back to the show Sean Clement. Gentlemen, the Stanley Cup looks like it's getting pretty close to being awarded. Last night, the Vegas Knights beat the Florida Panthers 3-2. Now have a 3-1 series lead. They're heading back to Vegas. It looks like the Cats, they've had 9 lives, but I think they've seemed to have used them all up, Naz.
The rat throwing is over.
God bless the Florida Panthers. They've had an incredible run. Been incredible in overtime, but they've run into an object here called the Las Vegas Knights, who can push back just as much as Florida can push forward.
Wally, this series should be over right now. It should be 4 straight. Florida didn't deserve to win any of the games, and it'll be hard pressed to bring it back to Florida for sure. I see Vegas hosting the Cup on Monday night.
Looks that way, but these Florida Panthers have been pretty resilient. They clawed their way back after they got themselves in a hole against the Boston Bruins. But Tkachuk, their spiritual leader, is injured. It's obvious, didn't play all that much in the third period last night. The Vegas forwards seem to have forechecked relentlessly. The Florida defense seems to be getting worn down. And, the Vegas defensemen, there's some pretty big boys back there that Florida physical game doesn't seem to be working as well as it did in prior series. Lou, give us your analysis.
Well, you know what? Watching the game last night, it was almost like the old Boston series all over again. They were definitely resilient and in the third period. They kept taking everything to the Las Vegas Knights. And, they almost came up. And obviously, Tkachuk is probably the key cog there. And it seems like he's got a little bit of a shoulder problem because he couldn't get the puck up on a couple of the chances that he had. But, you've got to give him credit because they go down fighting right till the end. I loved what happened with after the whistle was born. But again, and you've got to give a lot of compliments to the Vegas player for being so disciplined and not really fighting back because they know what's at stake for them, especially Pietrangelo. He seems like he's one of these guys that everybody likes to be picked on, but it's just a situation right now that I think Florida has to go into game 5 or like they have the other games. Keep getting the puck in deep and keep pounding them and more or less causing a lot of mistakes. Because I never saw Vegas yesterday. They were coughing up the puck once Florida was putting a lot of pressure on them. And I hadn't seen that before in the previous three series. So, I still give them an opportunity, even though it's very slim. But if they keep playing the way they are, the way they played in the third period, again, it's only one small little break that could change this whole series around.
Well, you never know. And this, as you say, Lou, there's no quit in this Florida team. Give them a lot of credit. And, they decided to get a little nasty after the final whistle as well. But, Vegas got some pretty nasty guys on their team as well.
Look at their D, though. It's so good. Theodore, Martinez, Pietrangelo, great players, right? Really good hockey players. And they're big. And that's the telling tale, I think.
They're big, no question about that.
And skilled,
and they're, you know what? They're winners. Pietrangelo, gold medal, Stanley Cup with the Blues. Martinez, Stanley Cup in L.A., I believe,
yes,
if I'm
sir.
Not mistaken.
Two.
Theodore has been around for a while. Big, strong, for lack of a, not necessarily nasty guys, but they know how to hold their own. And it's amazing job that the GM there has done. What's his fourth year in the league? Fourth year? Stanley Cup Finals twice,
Vegas has been in 6 years. But
6 years, sorry. And looks like it could be a Stanley Cup this year. Certainly, all the signs are pointing that way. And they seem to have a team built, I guess, the way we'd like to see the Toronto Maple Leafs built. Those are the types of players that thrive at playoff time, Lou.
Just think where the Leafs would be if they knocked off Florida. And as much talent as the Leafs do have, I hate to say it, but they could give Vegas a little bit of a battle, because right now Florida doesn't have the natural goal scorers that the Leafs do. And if the Leafs had played, again, it's all hypothetical here, the Leafs just could have given Vegas a little bit different look than what the Florida Panthers are giving them.
Yeah, we did sort of the same discussion last year when Leafs lost to Tampa. I thought that the Leafs could have given Colorado a good run because you're, sort of trying to match skill with skill. And I think this Leafs team, if they, it's like coulda, shoulda, woulda, what difference does it make now? But I could very well see them having given Vegas a run, if not even taking them out. But that's the whole thing. You got to figure out how to get through series one, and then you got to figure out how to get through series two. And I guess players who they've got to figure that out, right, Lou? You got to figure out how you got to put 2, 3, 4 series together. And the Leafs, it's amazing how we always get back to talking about the Leafs.
You can see the pain on the Vegas players' face as they got off the ice last night. There's a lot of discipline, a lot of commitment, and you have to have everybody, all 25 guys or 22 guys, depending on how many guys they play, they got to be pulling all in the right direction. They got to be on link with they just don't want to get caught with situations where they're outmanned, especially in the defensive zone, and letting Florida get an easy one to get back into this series.
Yeah, I mean, talk about a well-balanced lineup. I mean, their fourth liners are contributing. Their third D pair is contributing. And, how many times do we have to go over the same thing over and over and over again every year? The Stanley Cup winning teams, they get production. When the first and second liners aren't producing, the third and fourth liners step up. And it's the same thing on the back end, Naz. You want to win the Stanley Cup, you can't win it with 3, 4 players. We always talk about our core four in Toronto. They have to be the leaders, but you can't win it with 4 players. You can't win it with 5 mm-hmm. players. You can't even win it 8. You got to have 20 players who are contributing, and there can't be any weak links in the lineup.
They're winning it without Eichel even scoring a goal. That's amazing. that they can do that. And the depth on the team for sure has been very good for Vegas. The depth is awesome. And I don't see it going past Monday. I think they play Monday, but maybe Tuesday. But I don't think they're going to win Game 5. I think it's over for Florida.
Lou, we'll let you wrap it up.
You know what? Well, you said it. The Vegas Knights right now have a 1A, 1B, and 1C line. And when you start your fourth line against the top line against Florida, and Bruce Cassidy is not scared to put his fourth line out there where Paul Maurice has got to match up his fourth line up against Vegas's fourth line because he wants to get that fourth line, the Vegas fourth line, away from any of the top lines that Florida has. That says enough right there. When you can put any one of your three lines out there against anybody's line on the opposition, and even with their fourth line with Kolesar, Carrier, and Roy. Roy was on the ice for the last 2 minutes of the game. So it just goes to show you how much depth they have and the contribution that they're getting from all four lines.
Yeah, like I said, you can't count these cats out, the Panthers. They've, you know, they proverbial nine lives. I sort of think they've sort of used them all up, but you never know. They came back in the Boston series. But if Vegas does the expected here, you know, how incredible the just retribution for Bruce Cassidy. Got fired by the Boston Bruins. Bruins had an incredible award-winning season, record-setting season, and who wins the Stanley Cup? Bruce Cassidy. Talk about justice, Ness.
Yeah, for sure. That's you're certain now. Louis, what did you think of the signing of Shane Doan?
What's that?
What did you think
of the signing of Shane Doan?
Obviously, there's got to be a history between traveling and Shane Doan. Shane Doan did resign from the Phoenix position only because he didn't see that team going in any direction. I think it was more or less, it had a little bit to do with Austin Matthews and their relationship on seeing if they can get him signed. But I think it's a good signing because Shane's been, it's not somebody that's coming out of retirement completely. He's been in hockey, so he knows what the insides and outs are with running the corporation. And you know what? I think it was a good signing because he's a good hockey guy.
Yeah,
was just some name like Martin St. Louis, who wasn't coaching at all. Shane Doan was involved with a lot of the operations with the Phoenix Coyotes.
Yeah, I like the Shane Doan signing. I know the part about Austin Matthews, that's not the reason for the signing. I mean, it's a bonus. Why not? I mean, it's great. I mean, Shane Doan's is a good hockey man. He brought it every night when he played. He was tenacious, well-respected everywhere in the league. History with Brad Tree living. I applaud Brad for that signing. And did they sign him because of the connection with Austin Matthews? No, I don't think so. But I think that is not what's standing that. It's obviously a little bit of a bonus to throw into the mix. Lou, we're going to let you go. We've got a lot of golf to talk about. We've got to get on with the show, and we want to thank you for this morning. Thanks, Lou.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Lou.
Anyways, we're going to go to break. We're going to come back, and the world of golf received some shattering surprise news this week that seemingly came out of nowhere. The PGA Tour and the LIV Golf Tour have been mortal enemies for the last year, and somehow Jay Monahan and Yasser, His Excellency, found themselves on CNBC, and the golf world got turned upside down. We'll be talking to John Steinbreder, Global Golf Post. We'll be right back.
It was a rainy day when Pizzaville declared, "We'll never be the fastest. We'll never be the cheapest. We'll never be the snazziest dressed."
What?
Yeah, my point is, we want to be the best.
At Pizzaville, we want to make the best pizza. Stone-baked, the traditional Italian way.
Pizzaville, stone-baked pizza. Fiercely Canadian. Authentically Italian.
There are lawyers at Miller Thompson who know your industry. They'd like to introduce you to theirs. It starts with relationships. It's not just about happy clients. they support thriving business partners. Miller Thompson infuses law with the same tenacity you bring to your work, whether supporting your daily operations or offering urgent legal advice. But that's enough about them. Let's talk about you. Visit MillerThompson.com and find out how they can move your business forward.
We all value our sporting heroes. But what price would you put on one in mint condition? If you ask us, you'll get an honest answer. Mint Inc., trading cards and sports merchandise, is looking to buy your vintage collection of hockey, basketball, baseball, football, and soccer heroes. Come and see us in person at our new Toronto Mint Inc. Gallery at 198 Davenport, east of Avenue Road, or visit our store online at mintink.ca. Show us what you got, and we'll show you the money. Think Mint Inc.
Passion. It drives athletes, entrepreneurs, family businesses, and fast-growing companies. It's also what inspires KPMG Enterprise to help drive success. A dedicated audit, tax, law, and advisory practice, KPMG Enterprise delivers ideas and insights. Whether you want to grow your business, embrace technology, plan for an exit, or manage the transition of wealth, search KPMG Enterprise, understanding what it takes to make your business even better.
They're not here to be nice. They're here to be right. The boys are back. The Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are live on AM 740 in downtown Toronto, 96.7 FM. Live video and audio streaming on the internet at zoomerradio.ca. We're pleased to welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour senior editor for Global Golf Post and a good friend of the show, John Steinbreder. John, good morning. How are you this morning?
I'm good, Wally. How are you doing today?
We're doing great. Thanks, John. You and I have had a brief opportunity to chat yesterday. I picked up my phone. My phone started buzzing Tuesday morning, and I looked at my phone. You know, it's an Apple, and you get those notifications across the top. And I read the headline, and I had to look at it three times. I said, I couldn't believe what I was just reading. I said, this can't be, it's got to be fake news. It can't be real. Dug into my phone for a couple of minutes, and PGA Tour and the Saudi Public Investment Fund have come to some sort of arrangement. The golf world was set into a state of shock, to put it mildly. Nobody saw this coming. They did a remarkable job. Monahan and Yasser did a His Excellency did a marvelous job of keeping this quiet, to the extent that not even Greg Norman or Tiger Woods. And at first, the reports were Rory didn't know about it, but subsequent reports said he sort of got tipped off a little bit. But, John, when you heard this news, what came to your mind?
Well, shock, like everybody else. I don't think anybody saw this coming. And I agree with you. And your reaction is exactly what mine was and exactly what everybody I've talked to in the game was, first of all, we checked our calendars to make sure it wasn't April Fool's Day.
Yeah.
And then you started going, this has got to be, somebody's got to have this wrong here. This is crazy. Is this the Onion, the Babylon Bee, some sort of satire? And then it started to sink in, and the more it sunk in, you know, the more I guess it's understandable why it happened. Doesn't mean you have to like it necessarily for a variety of different reasons, but it does upon reflection. Now, we've only had a few days to reflect on it, but it does make a lot of sense. It is, the at the end of the day, the right move for all involved, but it's, for a lot of people, and I have to consider myself one of them, there are parts of it that are rather distasteful, too. And so it's an interesting thing we're going to have to get used to. We're going to have to assess. We're going to have to keep thinking about it, because I think there are a lot of details we're not aware of yet. I think this is still very much an amorphous sort of organization or setup, and what it's going to be and how it's going to work. So I think, A, there's lots of questions that yet to be answered, and B, you know, we all had sort of a weirdly emotional stake in this, and it was a real Shakespearean drama with a lot of villains, with a lot of heroes, and a lot of people on the side. And I think we're all trying to sort of sort through that and kind of how we feel about the characters and actors and all this and how it's all sort of sorted itself out.
How close was it to the players walking out on Tuesday at the Canadian Open? I heard some rumblings that they may be walking out, but they didn't eventually. But what was your reaction to that, John?
I don't think it was realistic. I think everybody's, you know, again, you're just so caught off guard, and I think it's got to be especially hard for these players, you know, to have the organization that represents them sort of do this in such a way. They had no idea what was going on, and I'm sure that had to infuriate them and get them very frustrated, but I think cooler heads prevail. They're playing in, you know, one of the great national opens in the world. They're playing for a lot of money. It is their job, and things, unfortunately, whether we like it or not, happen to you in your jobs. Mergers, acquisitions. I was at Time Inc. working for Sports Illustrated when Warner Brothers and Time Inc. merged, and some would say Time bought Warner, other would say Warner Brothers bought Time, but it was a complicated, confusing time, and having written about business for Fortune magazine for years during the 80s and then for Sports Illustrated writing about business, and I write about it a fair amount in golf, these sorts of things happen. They leave people frustrated, distraught, confused, and angry at times, and it's a natural reaction, but I think people quickly sort of realize they have jobs to do, and let's go do our jobs.
John, we're talking to John Steinbrenner of Global Golf Post, and I encourage our listeners, there's a tremendous article this week's called Seismic Shift in Global Golf Post. John, the villain, and we talk about heroes and villains, and I think you hit the nail on the head. The villain for a lot of people is Commissioner Jay Monahan, and I think out of all of this, you know, Jay Monahan may become a verb in the English language that, you know, that, you know, a business got Monahaned. He even admitted to being a hypocrite or being hypocritical. He didn't deny it. And this is, I think, what rubbed people the wrong way. And I think he crossed the line. And I want your thoughts on it, John. And I think in getting into it, I want to discuss the line that I believe he crossed, that it's just impossible for him to go back. We had the discussion about LIV on this show numerous amount of times. I had never had any problems with the Saudis operating a golf tour and paying these people all this money. That's fine. They're independent contractors. They invest in Uber. They invest in Boeing. They donate $1 billion to U.S. university endowment funds. I never understood why the world wanted to pick PGA Tour players to fight this particular battle. But Monahan's on the record. A year ago on CBS, he spoke with conviction. He used 9/11. He used family friends who lost loved ones. He called those ignoring Saudi Arabia's human rights record living under a rock. And in his most famous answer question to LIV defectors, have you ever had to apologize for being a member of the PGA Tour? I don't know how you walk that back, John. I don't think he can. He's going to have to live with those comments for a long, long time. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I don't think you're wrong. I think there's a lot to be said for how poorly he handled aspects of this last year, this battle, this competition, beginning with not talking to the Saudis and this team beforehand and maybe coming to some accommodation early on, and then to taking that road as you talk about it. And, you know, I sort of cringe a little bit when I hear this, because I, even though it wasn't the PGA Tour, but, you know, the PGA itself had a lot of issues in the day with, you know, Caucasian-only clauses and things of that going back to the early 60s. Now, that was before the tour formally existed, but I think we all got to be very careful about talking about being embarrassed about who we work for, and who we may be going to work for without context, without thinking about, you know, we've all got some things to be embarrassed about, and we all have some things we wish we had done differently. So when you try to take the moral high ground in business and in sports, like that. I think it's very difficult. It's very difficult when you have, you know, the Olympics being held in places like China and Russia, and we all seem to suck it up with that. So I agree with you. It was not particularly smart. It was very selective, and it put the players in a terrible position and shamed them, and I'm sure some of them in many ways, of making this decision. Now, it's not an easy decision, and you and I have talked about this. And, you know, joining LIV this was not your usual going to work from IBM to, you know, Xerox. I mean, this was a pretty big bridge crossing to a country that's in a kingdom that has a lot of issues from a human rights standpoint and have a much different way of operating. They don't have the rule of law over there that we have in the States. You've really signed on with somebody in something that's quite different from what you were used to and what you had over here. So it's not a simple move. You got to think about it and think about what the ramifications are. And you go in and you make your decision. But to sort of come down and to question the morality of people's move to do this, I think was a little too much. It was more than a little too much. And I think that certainly has hurt him, and I think it will hurt him. And listen, there's a lot of debate on this, and who knows what's going to happen. But I just can't imagine Jay continuing in his job for very long, because I think he's lost the trust and confidence of a lot of people. No matter how good this end result turns out to be, there are a lot of people that are feeling pretty betrayed, I think, at the moment and pretty misled. And that's not good. How do you leave that bunch after something like this has happened?
Yeah, I don't. I think the ultimate. I don't disagree. Monahan's trying to look at this from a long-term perspective. Ask me the question in 10 years whether we made a good decision or not, and likely it probably is. Probably in the long term, it probably is good. For professional golf, certainly to unite it. You know, you look at all the other major sports leagues that had to have fight two leagues. You go as far back as the AFL and the NFL, and then there was the ABA and the NBA and the WHA and the NHL. And mergers were always good for those leagues. After the mergers, they were able to take their businesses to a different level. So long term, this probably is a good decision, but I just don't see any scenario where Jay Monahan, I don't know how you walk back some of, you got you co-opt 9/11 families as part of your business argument. And then the 9/11 families, United Org this week blasted him and the tour as paid Saudi shills. I can't blame them for feeling that way. At the end of the day, John, I guess it always comes down to the money, doesn't it?
And that's what fueled this. I mean, yeah. There's no other way to look at it. And I think where Monahan deserves a lot of credit, because he's had to eat a lot of crow in doing this, is that he did make this decision because he saw the writing on the wall. And it's really quite simple. The Saudis could outspend the PGA Tour, just bury him. I equated it in our conversation yesterday to what the United States did with the Soviet Union from a defense spending standpoint, and we absolutely eventually the Cold War ended because we buried them economically. They couldn't survive with their economic system versus ours. And we were in a situation here, we mean golf, watching the PGA Tour try to compete with a sovereign wealth fund that it wasn't a fair fight. And so I think by doing this now rather than later, you have the tour in a much stronger position and are probably able to get a much better deal today than you would have gotten in 3 or 4 years, because this was unsustainable. I think one thing that's coming out more and more right now is the tour couldn't have gone on like this for much longer in terms of coming up with the money to support these new purses and to keep competing with these guys. It wasn't going to be sustainable. And so I think you'll have to give, him credit, Jay credit down the road, for certainly making the move and pulling the trigger on this now, as opposed to waiting too long and not getting it done.
When do you think the LIV players will be reinstated, John?
Well, I'm not sure when that's going to happen, and I'm not sure all of them are going to be reinstated. And I think the thing that's made this so interesting and so divisive, more than really anything else, I mean, the Saudis are are distasteful in their own ways. I'm sorry. You know, I mean, the way they treat women, the way they treat members of gays, lesbians, group, the fact that if you convert to Christianity, you're subject to the death penalty, the fact that there are no churches over there.
You forgot members of the press.
Yeah, and they have a way of treating people they don't agree with in the news media in pretty horrific ways. I think, you know, the villains in a lot of this were Greg Norman, Phil Mickelson, Sergio Deschambeau, these guys who not only just took the money, which is fine, but then, you know, wanted to have their cake and eat it too, and were constantly being critical and sort of chirpy about the whole thing. So I think they'll start to let some people back in. I don't know when the timing is for that. I haven't read the document itself, obviously, so I don't know. But I'm not convinced that they're going to let everybody back in. I would be shocked if they let Mickelson back in to the PGA Tour. I think Deschambeau may have some problems because these guys are just.
But
you know,
I don't disagree with you, John. And it's, you know, a lot of these guys are going to have a really tough time walking. You know, when you make public pronouncements, you got to be careful. They may make sense at the time, but you got to live with them forever. And at some point in the future, you can't walk them back, whether you'd like to or not. That's just the way it is. But if we're gonna do a ceasefire in all of the world's golf tours and try and put everything together for the better good of the game. And the whole point of this is we wanted the best to be playing against the best again outside of the major championships. And the other part of this is that we don't know what there's a zillion moving parts in this agreement, and we really don't know what's going to come out of it. But what's the point of settling all this and then you're not bringing your best back to play against the best?
No, I understand. That's a very good point. And I'm just throwing out what I've sort of heard. I'm not sure the best way to go. Ideally, I guess you'd like to have everybody come back and do it and take it from there. I mean, I think Mickelson's at the end of his career, his good finish at Augusta notwithstanding last year. And guys like Poulter and Westwood and McDowell are pretty much done with their good golf. So not that they'd be part of the PGA Tour, but, you know, coming back with the DP World Tour. So, yeah, you're right. I think in a perfect world it would be great if everybody came back, but you're also correct, as I think it's going to be very uncomfortable in some places. And some things have been said that are going to be never forgotten.
Yeah, I mean,
I just did make a point just real quick in this piece I wrote on Tuesday night, that the rivalries, I mean, if you want to talk about rivalries in golf right now, what's going to happen? I mean, these competitions are going to be so compelling. There's nobody happier with this right now than the organizers of the Ryder Cup of both sides of the pond, because those matches in Rome are going to be just full of tension and competition and drama, and they're going to be something else to see.
I almost look at Jay Monahan, and, you know, I appreciate and I respect him. He's obviously a very bright man, you know, and I'm sure there's a lot that's going to come out that, you know, it's going to in some ways justify his decision that perhaps the PGA Tour really didn't have any other choice in the circumstances. I think those facts will come out at some point in time. As you said, John, probably had no financial, you know, they were probably in a financial precipice of some kind. But I almost see this as Jay Monahan has taken a page out of Vince McMahon's book. If he can turn the professional golf into WWE and create these incredible player rivalries. Can you imagine? How compelling some of these Sunday afternoons might become? So certainly there's going to be a lot of uncomfortable situations in some locker rooms until this generation of golfers plays themselves out. But, you know, we don't really know what's going to happen to LIV Golf. Rory had the press conference at Oakdale the other morning, and I was there. I actually asked him a question. But he, in that press conference, he continued to fight. He said, "I hate LIV Golf." So it's not like they've put down their swords. So I don't know. And Greg Norman's been out of the loop. I don't know how LIV Golf and the PGA Tour coexist, but there's no concept just yet that LIV Golf is going to disappear.
I agree with you on that. I think Norman is gone. I think he has to be gone. I don't think there's any surprise. We've barely heard about him for the last 3 or 4 months. I think he was told in no uncertain terms by his bosses to just shut up, just be quiet, because he wasn't helping any sort of circumstances. And I think it's very interesting to see, you know, two people and Jimmy Dunn and Ed Herlihy, who are on the Players Council for the PGA Tour, who are friends of mine, who Jimmy, of course, with his connection with 9/11 and losing all those colleagues of his from work and good friends of his at work and the terrorist attack that year, who were working up on the 104th floor of one of the towers. And he's, you know, I've described him as sort of Nixon gone to China, with Jimmy being one of the ones in charge of doing this, you know, one of the most anti-Saudi guys you can imagine based on his experiences in life, being the one who was leading in many ways these discussions. And, you know, I think there's a lot of people, and I know Ed wasn't a huge fan of this endeavor from the beginning, but these guys are realists, want a great investment banker, want a great lawyer, and I think, you know, I think they've shown that sometimes you have to, as a friend of mine put it, and it's in my article, you gotta put stuff away. If something makes really good business sense, you gotta put away your animosity, you gotta put away your emotions, and you gotta sort out and make what the best business decision is. And, you know, and Ed and Jimmy are two of the smartest guys I've ever met, and they love the game of golf, they're passionate about the game of golf. And I think, you know, that they showed the way in terms of you have to look at something with cold-eyed calculation and say, okay, is this the right move or not for golf, taking emotion out of the situation. And I think theirs is a very good example to follow. You may not like it, but I think what they did, I think in their view they feel it, and I tend to agree with them because of how I know them and who they are, that if they feel this was the best thing for the game of golf, then I'm inclined to agree with them until somebody really demonstrates otherwise to me.
We've been talking to John Steinbrenner. John, unfortunately, we have to let you go. We haven't had a chance to talk about the Canadian Open. We've run out of time. Our next guest is a PGA Tour coach, been coaching Ryan Moore over at Oakdale. So we'll chat about him about the Canadian Open. We do have to talk about it. But we know we're going to have you back next Sunday. It's another major championship Sunday. It's U.S. Open. So we'll continue the discussion then.
I can't wait, guys. Have a great one. Love to see this leaderboard you've got for the Open. Hope you have a great end of the day today.
Yeah.
CT Pan's one of the great kids of all time, and love to see Rory, Justin, and Tommy Fleetwood right there behind him. It'll be a great afternoon.
No, we want Corey Connors or Nick Taylor to win.
I don't. Those would make me happy as well.
We'll talk to you next Sunday, John. Thanks so much for joining
us. Cheers, guys. Thanks
so
much.
John.
Bye-bye.
John Steinbrenner, senior editor at Global Golf Post.
Funny, Lionel Messi signed with the MLS. I just thought about that.
Yeah.
MLS.
Interesting.
Over the Saudi Arabians.
Yeah, well, that I'm sure they offered, as Ted DiBiase used to say, I'm sure everybody has their price. On that note, we're going to go to break, and we'll be right back with Sean Clement.
It was a rainy day when Pizzaville declared, "We'll never be the fastest. We'll never be the cheapest. We'll never be the snazziest dressed."
What?
Yeah, my point is, we want to be the best. At Pizzaville, we want to make the best pizza. Stone-baked, the traditional Italian way.
Pizzaville, stone-baked pizza. Fiercely Canadian. Authentically Italian.
We all value our sporting heroes. But what price would you put on one in mint condition?
If you ask us, you'll get an honest answer. Mint Inc., trading cards and sports merchandise, is looking to buy your vintage collection of hockey, basketball, baseball, football, and soccer heroes. Come and see us in person at our new Toronto Mint Inc. Gallery at 198 Davenport, east of Avenue Road, or visit our store online at mintink.ca. Show us what you got, and we'll show you the money. Think Mint Inc.
Passion. It drives athletes, entrepreneurs, family businesses, and fast-growing companies. It's also what inspires KPMG Enterprise to help drive success. A dedicated audit, tax, law, and advisory practice, KPMG Enterprise delivers ideas and insights. Whether you want to grow your business, embrace technology, plan for an exit, or manage the transition of wealth, search KPMG Enterprise, understanding what it takes to make your business even better.
There are lawyers at Miller Thompson who know your industry. They'd like to introduce you to theirs. It starts with relationships. It's not just about happy clients. They support thriving business partners. Miller Thompson infuses law with the same tenacity you bring to your work, whether supporting your daily operations or offering urgent legal advice. But that's enough about them. Let's talk about you. Visit MillerThompson.com and find out how they can move your business forward.
There are two ways to argue sports with these guys, and none of them work. The boys are back, the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are live on AM 740 in downtown Toronto, 96.7 FM. Live video and audio streaming on the internet at zoomerradio.ca. We're pleased to welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour our good friend Sean Clement. Sean, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, guys. It's what a week, huh?
It's been an incredible week down in all over the golf world. We've just spent quite a bit of time talking to John Steinbrenner about it. John, I know that you've got a vested interest in the Canadian Open and the results of the Canadian Open. You've been doing some work down at Oakdale and with PGA Tour player Ryan Moore. You're a PGA Tour coach. Tell us all about the work you're doing nowadays.
Well, it's really cool to be at a time in your life where, you know, all that wisdom and experience is starting to pay off and be able to help the guys at the highest level. And it was just a tremendous week. Was really cool to be back in Toronto. I missed you guys. And, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing what happens today and to see how far up Ryan can climb that leaderboard.
Sean, a PGA Tour coach, give our listeners an idea. What's your approach? What do you look for? How do you help your golfers? I know you guys are probably like lawyers. You can't breach, coach-client confidentiality. I get that part of it. What essentially is the role of a PGA Tour coach? What do you consider your job to be?
To assist your player in any way you can to get him that extra notch better. And every one of them are so different. You just go through, and we played with Snedeker and Kevin Chappell in the practice round. And it was such a cool dynamic. I remember seeing Kevin Chappell win. I followed him the last nine holes at the Texas Valero Open when he was just on fire, just firing on every flagstick, it was the only option he had. And it's really cool to see these guys and, when they're on fire and when they're struggling and what are the things that they need to do to get back to where they need to be. So, and it's some guys are really very technical and some guys don't want to know anything about technique. They're just looking for a feel to a target. And once they latch onto that feel, watch out.
Sean, do you have putting coaches also? I know there's swing coaches, but do you have putting coaches?
Oh, yeah. You've got short game coaches. You've got putting coaches. There are some very elaborate teams out there now.
Sean, PGA Tour coaches or just golf coaches in general, do you have any that you admire more than any? Who do you think who do you think are the best in the business, and why are they the best in the business? Other than yourself, of course.
Well, you know, hats off to the guys that are there, because, you know, when you're approached by a player, I mean, it's his livelihood, his team, everything depends on his performance. So it's you really have to look at it on a broad sense and, you know, think about the consequences to, you know, what you're transmitting to them. And it's like, hey, you know, it's not like you got to go work on this for a month and come back and hope for the best, right? It's like, it's got to work today, now, because we got a tournament to go play. So it's my hat's off to them. You know, these guys are, you know, we're highly adaptable machines. And the guys that are out there, like Sean Foley, and, you know, Butch is retired, but, you know, a lot of the guys are still going to Vegas to see him, because he's got a way to give them that confidence and to just to say the right thing at the right time. You know, that's the craft that these guys are in. And, you know, I have nothing but great things to say, you know.
Sean, do you think it's important who you play with in the final rounds? I saw one of the players that was playing with Connors yesterday. I think it was Hatton.
Yeah.
He was cursing all over the place. Does that affect the other golfer?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, that's, you know, there's a lot of talk in the background, you know, depending on the player. If you got a guy who's slow as molasses and you're a fast player, you're in for a hard day, you
yeah.
know. It's having the right partner that really suits you, and then you get on a birdie train with them, and you know there's some really cool dynamics that arise during a round of golf on tour. It's really cool.
Well, we've got something special happening. Sean, you were over at Oakdale the other day, as was I. We didn't get a chance to bump into each other. Naz and I are headed over there right after the show. Thanks to Golf Canada, we're being treated very well.
As you should.
Thank you for that. You know, Oakdale's a pretty special place. It's a first-time Canadian Open. There's a long history there. Yeah. It's the place where George Knutson, his spirit you still feel his spirit all around the golf course. Some other great golfers there, Wilf Hominuk. And we've got a tournament going on. CT Pan is in the lead, minus 14. Rory worked his way up the leaderboard, probably got rid of some of his live discussion for a couple of days and concentrate on golf.
Oh,
Justin Rose is there. Sorry, go ahead, Sean.
I'm just amazed at Rory that he's in the position that he's in. He's actually in a great position to defend his title for the third time. And my hat's off to him, because, you know, to be able to put that kind of distractions aside.
Yeah, it's
unbelievable.
Pretty phenomenal. I was, you know, I'm disappointed in the PGA Tour that the Canadian Open did not achieve elevated status. To be quite frank, the field's probably not as good as it should be, but the leaderboard today is exceptional. And so the cream has risen to the top, and it's going to be a fabulously exciting day of golf this afternoon, just as it was at St. George's last Sunday. And I hope the PGA Tour takes notice and, you know, raises the Canadian Open to the status that it deserves through its history, through being considered the fifth major for so many years, being a national open on the PGA Tour. You know, and we got to get rid of this date between the Memorial and the U.S. Open. But this afternoon's golf is just going to be compelling. You know, we got CT Pan in the lead, but he's being chased by Rory, who's trying to win three Canadian Opens in a row. And then we've got Justin Rose, who's one of the great golfers, and the coolest guy on the tour, Tommy Fleetwood. And after all of that, we've got two Canadians in the mix. And if you know, and they're coming down 18, and they're in the mix to win this thing, it's just going to be incredible. So, Sean, what do you think the chances of a Canadian winning this afternoon?
Extremely high. Extremely high. You've got two very hot players right now. You know, it's Corey and Nick Taylor. You know, look at the round that he shot, you know, this week. It's that is phenomenal on that golf course. I went out and saw the whole course during the practice round. That rough is way up.
Yeah, it's pretty tough. Yeah.
Around the greens, you know, you see a lot of the guys just hacking that ball onto the green in the most – could you imagine – hacking delicately because the greens are so slopey. I mean, that ball can just take off on you. And, you know, even the guys in the PGA Tour, they were, you know, in a couple of holes, they were wondering where to put the flags because it was a real delicate situation, like borderline U.S. Open stuff, you know? So anybody who gets around this golf course under par today is going to do extremely well.
Yeah, certainly. Naz?
An interesting 18th hole at Oakdale. It's a really a little gimmicky, but what do you think of it?
Well, you know, it's like playing two long par threes. So the guys are basically hitting a long iron or a hybrid off the tee, and they got to put it between a hazard and a very well-placed bunker on the left. And then you've got a majorly uphill. I mean, it's a good thing it was downwind this week, but it's way uphill coming in. I mean, it's, you know, TV doesn't do it any justice. It's like the 18th hole at Augusta National or the 8th hole at Augusta, that par 5. It's way up the hill, and then the green is really severe. So it really isn't, you know, a slouch by any means, but it is a very birdieable hole.
It's definitely to me it's a stretched out par 4, which, you know what, on a Sunday when people are fighting to win, it's going to be compelling theater on that 18th because I have a gut instinct that somebody's going to drop an eagle there to win the tournament. I just think something spectacular is going to happen on 18.
It's going to decide the tournament for sure.
And it's going to be, you know, it's definitely a birdie hole, no question. But there, I can see one of these guys, you know, one of these top six or seven dropping an eagle on that hole, and the crowd's going to go crazy. And the rink, they call it the rink. I was there yesterday when Mike Weir came through, and every time a Canadian comes through, you've got all those people on 14 there. They've had a couple, as Don Cherry said, a couple of too many pops. Take their shirts off. They're banging the boards. The referees are there. And every time a Canadian comes there, they start belting out the Canadian, Oh Canada. It's just
awesome?
Incredible. You know, I was there when Mike Weir went there yesterday, and, you know, they start singing Oh Canada, and it's just the most remarkable thing, Sean.
It's and that's the toughest par three on the course. It's given a lot of players fits because it's uphill, and you don't feel the wind because you got, you know, you're inside the rink, and the ball just, you know, and you have to look at the trees near the green. And the guys have been starting it over the right bunker, and the wind's been taking it way left into the left bunker, into the boards on the other side. So it's been very trying.
Anything else you'll be looking out for this afternoon, Sean?
You know, I'm looking to see who's going to have their wits about them, and you know that nice calm demeanor, that patience. You got to be super patient on this golf course, especially on the front nine. I mean, once you get past that front nine, and then you're coming in, you got a little par five and a short par four, and a little, you know, the ninth is a nice par three, and then you get on the back nine, and it's a completely different golf course. The greens are bigger, they're less slopey, and then that's where, you know, that momentum builds up until we get to the last three holes and that crescendo on 18. It's just going to be fab.
Yeah. Sean, we only got about 30 seconds left. I know that you've been a key part of Canadian golf on the teaching side, and I know Canadian golf means the world to you. It's your life. It's your passion. Man, what would it mean to you for a Canadian to win the Canadian Open today?
It's the story of the century, right? Because it's pretty much been that long since the Canadians won their own national championship. And, you know, Mike Weir came so close in 2004. And you know, it would be epic, just absolutely epic.
Oh, on that note, Sean, we're going to thank you once again. We appreciate always your wisdom in golf, and we also appreciate your passion, and thanks for taking the time for us.
It was an honor, you guys. Have a great time out there, and can't wait for next time.
We will, and we're anxious to get there. Sean Clement. Naz!
Nick
it's 10
Taylor,
o'clock.
Nick Taylor.
We're headed to Oakdale.
Connors.
Go Connors. Go Nick. Taylor. Go Adam. Go Canada.
They need a 64 to win it, I think. And, one of the two guys.
You said it 2 weeks ago. Canadians going to win this year. So, Naz, in all the years I've been on the air with you, I hope this is the one time I hope you're right. It would be awesome. We're going to be there, and I can't wait to jump in the air. And Corey Connors is going to get an eagle on 18. To all our listeners, enjoy the Canadian Open if you choose to watch it. And thank you for listening, and we'll be back again next Sunday morning. Thank you.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.